This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
KMOX Sports.
Come on, let's get going now.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Wynn swings and he drives that to left field. Back to the track and gone!
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
Now, Matt Pauley and the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Here we go on a Friday night. Welcome in. We're going to be a little shorter than normal tonight, but not by too terribly much. We'll lead you into SLU Billikens basketball. They are on the road this evening. Generally, if you're on the road in Philadelphia in the Eastern time zone, you're starting earlier than normal, but it's going to be a late night tonight at Hagen Arena in Philadelphia, an 8 o'clock central tip-off. That means they are tipping off tonight at 9 o'clock. That's going to give those fans out there a little time to get all ready and lubricated for that game. That's not always the toughest place to play, although SLU, they've had good success there. So that could be a challenging venue, but SLU, it's one of the few places that historically they've got a pretty good record at. It's just one of four venues in the A-10 where they have a winning record. So they come in having won 7 of their 10 A-10 games. The Billikens do. St. Joseph's, they are 4-5 in the conference. And we're actually going to talk a little bit more about that coming up later on in the program. Our guy, Matthew Rocchio, who does a great job with some Billikens coverage. He's also a working in studio with us tonight. He's going to join us here in about 10 minutes. So we've got a stacked program. 6:35, we'll head out to New Orleans for a conversation with our guy Joe Roderick. He's been covering the Super Bowl all week long, and we'll hear from him on what's been going on over the last couple days. He also has a conversation with Fox Sports broadcaster Chris Myers. We'll play that for you next hour. Also, our weekly Friday conversation between myself and Kevin Wheeler, where we look back at the week that was for the Cardinals. We'll do that coming up later on as well in the next hour before we get into Billikens basketball. Did want to start, though, with the news of the last about 26, 27 hours. Didn't get into this on the Countdown to Opening Day show yesterday, so we'll jump into both these things. And Kevin and I will certainly talk about this, but the Cardinals are making some roster tweaks going into pitchers and catchers reporting next Wednesday as spring training is just about here. And the interesting thing about the moves that have happened over the last couple days is a lot is being made of them because they are the only things that the Cardinals have done. In a normal season, in a normal offseason, these moves would barely be talked about. You're talking about a guy who has got mostly minor league experience being picked up to hold the final spot on the 40-man roster, and someone with options who certainly does not have a guaranteed spot on the major league roster, just adding a good depth piece to the 40-man. And you're talking about a guy who was signed as to a minor league contract and getting an invite to major league spring training. In a normal year, normal offseason, we are casually mentioning these things, maybe referencing, well, if everything goes well, this is what it could potentially turn into, knowing full well that there's just as much of a shot of it not really, you know, resulting in anything as it resulting in something good. Well, Cardinals haven't done anything this offseason, so now all of a sudden we're putting a lot of focus on these moves. And I do think there is an upside to each of these moves that could play out. Could both these guys not even be in the organization by the time we get to opening day? Yes, that is a distinct possibility depending on how spring training goes, depending on what else is available out there. If all of a sudden the Cardinals need a 40-man roster spot for something else, there's no guarantee they hold on to these guys. But the first one yesterday, Michael Hellman, was acquired from the Twins in exchange for cash considerations. The Twins no longer had room for him on their 40-man roster after they made a couple moves, including bringing in a former Cardinal in Harrison Bader. So they bring in Bader, they do a couple other things, they didn't have spot on the 40-man roster, and instead of just losing him for nothing, they at least get the cash considerations from the Cardinals. Basically, the Cardinals give up nothing for him, if we're really being honest about it. And now Hellman comes in with at least an opportunity to compete for a job on the Major League roster. All offseason long, when we have talked to John Mozeliak about what additions the club could potentially make, even with the stated goal of moving on from Nolan Arenado, Mo has stated that he would like to add to the bullpen and he would like to add a right-handed bat that can play the outfield. Well, they have a right-handed bat who can play the outfield. And not only can Michael Hellman play in the outfield, he can basically go play any position you want outside of catcher. He has done that in the minor leagues. Even last year in the big leagues, he filled a few spots. So if we run into a situation where Nolan Arenado is still a Cardinal and he doesn't get traded before opening day, which I don't think that's likely. I think Arenado is going to get moved, but I could be wrong on that. If we run into a situation where the Cardinals do not move on from Nolan Arenado, that might result in Thomas Sejacy not being on the roster because there might just not be enough playing time for Sejacy, and a young guy like that, you want to make sure he's in the lineup a lot. Well, if Sejacy's not in the on the roster, you have to have somebody who can play shortstop when Mason Wynn's not available, and Hellman can play a little bit of shortstop. He's not going to be great there, but you don't need somebody great at shortstop. Mason Wynn plays just about every single day. And can you put a Jose Fermin there? Fermin's going to be on the roster, yeah, but Hellman can do more. He's a right-handed bat. He can play in the outfield. He can also play center field. So there's a lot of different things he can do. So this was a shrewd pickup by John Mozeliak and the Cardinals. It might turn into nothing, but it also might turn into something where this guy becomes a valuable piece. And 2 years ago, he had a fantastic minor league season. This past year at AAA, he was fine. He certainly did not embarrass himself in the very short amount of time he got in the big leagues last year. He appeared in 9 major league games last year, was 3-for-10 with a couple doubles. He's an OPS guy. He's going to get you some extra base hits, which is good. So again, this might be an absolutely nothing move, but it might also turn into something where he becomes a nice bench piece for the Cardinals. So worst case scenario, he doesn't do anything in spring and you need his 40-man roster spot for somebody else and you move on from him and you never gave up anything for him really in the first place. So I like this move and we'll see what ends up happening with him. The other move being made today, and I think this is the more interesting one because the Cardinals absolutely have some needs in the bullpen and they want to be able to have more guys who can handle high leverage innings. And I don't know how this is going to play out, but they signed Nick Anderson to a minor league contract that includes an invite to Major League spring training. Let's start with the downside of Anderson. He's had a hard time staying healthy. And you know, you hope that the Cardinals performance staff, which is, there's a new head on the performance side with Rob Serfolio. You hope that what results in that is Cardinals players being able to stay a little bit more healthy here moving forward. But when Anderson was at his best, and he was with the Tampa Bay Rays in 2019, so he was with Heim Bloom in 2019. Heim Bloom's fingerprints are all over them bringing in Nick Anderson. Anderson in 2019 was really spectacular, especially when he split time between Miami and the Rays. By the time he got to the Rays, had a 2.11 ERA. His strikeout numbers, there were about 41 strikeouts in 21 innings, included his time in Miami that year, 110 strikeouts in 65 innings. He has historically been a 2-1, you know, 2 strikeouts per innings guy. Now, he ran into some injury issues, and those numbers have been going down recently. Last year was not an especially good year. He pitched with Kansas City last year. His ERA was 4, but when you looked at his expected ERA and you looked at his FIP and things like that, they were They were not great. They were 5+. So he did not have an especially good season last year, but a guy who throws hard, a guy who can get strikeouts when he's right, and somebody who's going to come in and compete for a spot with the Cardinals. So good, solid depth moves at the worst. These guys don't do much of anything in spring training, and maybe they end up outside of the organization. Their ceilings are high enough that at best they come in and they become pieces that the Cardinals are able to use. So it's good to have depth. That's what the Cardinals were looking for in these two moves. And it's nice to actually be able to talk about baseball players joining the organization. So that's kind of my take on that. More about those two individuals with Kevin Wheeler coming up at about 7:30 or so tonight. Up next, our guy Matthew Rocchio is going to join us. We'll talk some Billikens basketball with him. SLU in action this evening as they are set to match up on the road against St. Joseph's. So we'll preview that game coming up in just a moment. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. We're a little short tonight. We've got almost a full show. We'll end about 15 minutes early because we've got Billikens basketball tonight, late night in Philadelphia. 8 o'clock tip-off, 7:45 for the broadcast with Bob Ramsey and Earl Austin Jr. Billikens are coming off a win their last time out, where bluntly they stole it. They absolutely stole it at UMass, winning 73-71. Had no business winning that game, down I think 5 with about 35 seconds to go, and they came back. They made some plays defensively. They hit some big shots, and now they'll try to go for back-to-back road wins. They're in Philadelphia this evening, and they match up against St. Joseph's. Our own Matthew Rocchio, he's working in the studio tonight producing the show, but he does a great job covering the Billikens and certainly looking at them from a very unique stance. If you don't follow him on Twitter, you should, at RockSTL. That's RockSTL. He joins us right now. And Matthew, I know that was a game that you were pretty fired up about the other night with the way they came back. That was something.
Yeah, that was insane. I mean, they keep on fighting, and usually they're one possession short, and that's the problem. They put themselves in these holes, and they can't climb out of it, one possession short. And then luckily, as so rarely happens, you turn the ball over on an inbounds and with under 30 seconds left and the game has changed.
But you know what? That's a great lesson for basketball in general, because these teams practice those kind of plays over and over and over. And like, what? It happens not even once a year. I mean, that never, ever, ever happens. But you work on that because you have to be ready and able to go if that situation presents itself.
Absolutely, 100%. And I think the context around some of those situations is interesting to me, because the turnover on the inbound play is inexcusable. But if you're looking at how the fans, you know, the opposing fans at UMass are reacting, they're really mad about the turnover earlier that Amari McCautry also caused, where they're trying to pass it through the lane and Amari knocks down. They're really mad at that. And I look at that, I go, well, honestly, if you're the player in the moment, you get those 2 points, the game is over.
Yeah.
And at that point, it was 3-on-2 UMass, and he thought, if I can thread this pass, it's game over. So from that perspective, it's like, I understand why the player was trying that, but this is, every once in a while, you know, the weird concoction of things happen and everything broke SLU's way.
It did, and winning games like that can play out, because I think this is still a team that's like learning how to win. They're learning. Yeah. I think they're still learning Josh Schertz's system. I don't think they're playing exactly the way coach wants them to play quite yet. But not only are they learning the X's and O's, clearly Schertz and company came in to lift the overall standard of Billikens basketball, and that's winning close games, that's being able to fight, that's showing the character. It's all the cliche tag words that sportscasters use, but there's there's truth behind all of those things. And winning a game like that in that moment, making the plays, yeah, you get the turnover, but then you got to hit the basket. To miss the shot and then get the second opportunity and to shoot that three the way that went down, I mean, that's a team that is learning how to win games like that, and that's what it takes to win games in March.
And you kind of mentioned Swope's plays. For me, the big one is the play of Amari McCautry. And if you watch the highlight, specifically there's a SLU video that they put out where they're shooting from the baseline side, where Amari McCautry's reaction after Isaiah Swope hits that three-pointer to take the lead, his head drops into his hands, and it's obviously just pure elation, but also that's a weight off a freshman's shoulders who was getting minutes in the non-conference schedule and then kind of hit a wall a little bit. and hadn't been getting those minutes. And despite the fact the team needed him to play, because he would play, he'd play 2 minutes, he'd make a defensive mistake, he'd turn the ball over, and he wouldn't see the floor again. So him getting those minutes in crucial clutch moments and making the play, that was big for Amari McCautry going forward, and that was big for SLU having a player like Amari McCautry, who's right now your seventh player despite being a freshman. He's got to make an impact in these last eight games and into the conference tournament.
It was 9 seconds left when SLU took the lead, right? Did I have that right?
I believe so.
That was the longest 9 seconds.
Yes, it was.
You know, and I mean, 9 seconds is an eternity in basketball. And for that game to end the way it ended with the block and everything, I mean, that just, I think anybody watching that, hoping for a SLU win, saw that whole thing play out in slow motion.
Yeah. It was definitely slowed down. You're thinking, and just the way the season's gone for St. Louis this season, you're thinking, well, they're going to the line because Kalu's going to get, you know, tagged up for a foul on the block, and then we're going to overtime, and who knows what happens there. That's the kind of thought process you have after some of the games that SLU's played in this year.
Really random, off the beaten path thing. I've seen this on social media. There was a UMass kid who was like supposed to win $10,000 for making 4 shots, including a half court shot. And then anytime like you win money like that in a contest, it's always an insured thing. Like if you win a radio contest for $100,000, the radio station isn't giving you that money. They have a deal with an insurance company. They pay the insurance company, and then the insurance company pay it. So the kid's foot was on the line at half court when he made the shot. So now the insurance company is saying, we're not paying you the $10,000. The UMass AD I saw today on social media was like, we're going to get him this money. So was that the SLU game where that happened?
I believe it was actually a UMass women's basketball.
You're right. It was a UMass women's game. Yeah, you're right.
Well, you know, with a way schedule, sometimes they line up, but I do not believe that was against the SLU.
No, you're 100% right. It was a UMass women's, because I saw what UMass first tried to offer the kid, like, instead. Yeah. And I love women's basketball. I spent years broadcasting women's basketball at the collegiate level. This is not a shot at women's basketball at all. But if you're supposed to win $10,000 and the consolation prize is courtside tickets at a women's game, like, it's not the same.
UMass, by the way, has come out and said that they will. They're giving him the $10,000.
Good
themselves.
Like, $10,000 is a lot of money, but to an athletic department, you should be able to lose $10,000.
Yeah, they're doing fine.
Yeah, you'll be all right. This game, but a couple things. Robbie Avila is he's a top 10 candidate for the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar Award. This award each year goes to the top center in college basketball. We've seen the center not have so much. They're going away, you know, college basketball in general, NBA college basketball. It's more about positionless basketball. But Avila is one of those guys that can show you that if you use the center the right way, they can have a profound impact on the other four guys.
Yeah, no doubt. And you can feel it when he doesn't have that impact, as he hasn't had for the last few games, how much, you know, the orbit changes completely for the St. Louis offense, and teams can now focus on Isaiah Swope, and they can force Gibson Jimerson away from the three-point line, and now he has to be a threat driving the ball. And he has been. That's the only reason they've been in these games the last few rounds. But, you know, Robbie's got to step it up. There's a reason he's on that watch list, which is that he can carry a team. And tonight's going to be a big game, and hopefully Robbie steps up for it.
Yeah, St. Joseph's, again, they're not special. They're 4-5 in A-10 play. And this is actually I said this earlier, this is one of those places that the Billikens actually have had a fair amount of success being able to go to and play in. But there is nothing tougher than a road win. It's really challenging to go on a road trip and get back-to-back road wins. I don't care who you're playing. It's a conference game. It's going to be late night. We'll see how many fans they get tonight and how rowdy they might be. National TV game, really, 9 o'clock start in Philadelphia. I'm not saying this is a hornet's nest situation, but I am saying Billikens need to be ready to go.
Yeah, they are. And honestly, I'm kind of surprised at where the line's been going. It's actually been bending towards St. Joseph in Vegas, which kind of surprises me. It's moved, more in favor of St. Joseph than it was than it opened. And you have to realize 16-point win for the Billikens back at home. Big thing there though was Xavier Brown, who probably not the best player on St. Joseph, but has the highest usage rate. When he's on the floor, the ball's going to be in his hands a lot of the time. He was injured for a couple games, and he was coming back during that game here in St. Louis. He only played like 15, 16 minutes coming off the bench. He's been in the starting lineup now for the last 6-7 games since that game. He's averaging almost 19 points per game. So him being back in the lineup, that's going to be a big aspect to why this game is right now in Vegas's mind breaking towards the Hawks.
Yeah, I see St. Joe's 6.5. Is that what you're seeing?
Yeah, that's what I got too.
Okay, so we'll see. So the Billikens are trying to get the, we'll call it an upset if they win tonight.
There
Billikens are looking for the upset tonight in St. Joseph's. Matthew, thanks for taking a few moments.
Thank you so much, Matt.
Matthew Rocchio joining us, talking Bills basketball. When we come back, our friend Joe Roderick joins us from New Orleans. That's next. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. You're going to get a lot of Joe Roderick here over the next hour or so. He's about to join us from New Orleans, and then he collected an interview with Fox Sports broadcaster Chris Myers, talking through a lot of things, talking baseball, talking football, talking even dog shows. That's going to be coming up in our next hour, so you want to be tuned in for that. But right now, let's head to New Orleans. Our good friend Joe Roderick, who's covering the Super Bowl for us, is there. Hey, Joe, how's New Orleans treating you over the last couple days?
New Orleans has been great. They you can really tell. I mean, as the week goes on, the crowds, they just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And today, leaving the convention center, I mean, it is just all red and green all over town.
What type of events going on at the convention center today that you were at?
So that's where Media Row has been all week. That's kind of been, I mean, the convention center down here in New Orleans is one of the biggest in the country. It takes a real long time to get from the Great Hall A all the way down to Hall J. It's a trek, and the media center is kind of right in the middle of it. And then as you go down, that's where the NFL experience is, which has it again. That's another thing that has just exploded over the last few years. That's one of the. It's made for kids. And it has a lot of interactive games, target practice. They make it feel like you're in a 2-minute drill or like a scrambling running or quarterback. They have a 40-yard dash. You can kick field goals out there. You can pretend like you're a draft pick. There are so many things to do, and it takes up a huge, huge area of the convention center. And then as you're walking around, you can buy drinks and food for unreasonable prices. It really is just jam-packed, and it's one of those where I kind of always try to sneak in there around Tuesday and check it out, because that's when they're putting the final touches on it. Because once it opens up at about 3:00 on Wednesday, it's really, really hard to walk around the experience. And of course, after you're done at the experience, they take you through the NFL team shop, which if you can think of it, they will sell it to you with an NFL logo or a team logo on it.
What is the most egregious price that you have seen on something since being down there?
Oh man, just like a regular like quarter zip, Matt. I just like there are things I won't even like touch. I won't even look at. But there was like a quarter zip that I looked at the other day. It was $180. It's just, I mean, it's a dry fit quarter zip, and it's $180. But I mean, they also, you can find the cheap stuff there. Like you could find just a regular, cotton T-shirt for $35 that has the Super Bowl logo on it. Or you can get stuff that, they partner with Tommy Bahama or Starter, and they partner with all of the big companies, and really just the price gets up there quite a bit on some of these things. I always get, I collect the mini helmets from all of the Super Bowls. I get a mini helmet every year when I go for that. And just the price of that, I think I remember like the first one I bought probably been about $40, and now it's $65. So it's just the price just keeps going up a little more each and every year.
The Super Bowl is always interesting because so many of the tickets are connected to NFL corporate partners, and there's going to be a lot of people who are sitting in that game who don't have much of a rooting interest, but obviously it's also the biggest game, and fans try to get in there. Two pretty rabid fan bases with the Philadelphia fan base and the Kansas City fan base. As you've walked around, do you feel like there's more Chiefs fans or more Eagles fans there?
That's a good question. I think I would have to say Eagles, and I don't think that means it's going to be
more Eagles fans than Chiefs fans at the actual Super Bowl on Sunday. I think one of the reasons for that is because the Chiefs have been there so much, their fans will still go. Their fans just don't feel the need to get there a few days early to experience everything going on in the city, if that makes sense. Like, they know, hey, I could just fly in Sunday night and I could just go to the game. I don't need to be there for every single minute of it, where I know the Eagles were just there a couple years ago. And this is actually, I believe, the third Super Bowl that I've covered where the Eagles have played in it. But I still think that that fan base has not, you know, seen it enough. And I think that's similar to maybe like the Patriots, you know, 10 years ago, where they were there so often that at some point fans are like, okay, you know, if you really, really wanted to go there and buy a ticket, you probably would have done so already.
So we've spent a lot of time talking about some of the off-field stuff, but we're now within a couple days of the actual game being played. From a health standpoint, Kansas City's really healthy. All players on the 53-man roster are healthy. Sky Moore, who's on injured reserve, has been limited in practice, listed as doubtful, so he probably won't be active. But of the 53 players on the actual roster, they're all set to play for Philadelphia. Brandon Graham, he says he's going to play, but he's listed as questionable. But it certainly seems like each of these teams were able to use that extra week last week. And for the most part, we're going to see just about everybody in this game.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. And you have two really good coaches that are probably very well prepared and not going to be fooled by anything that these teams are going to put out there on Sunday. And that's something I know you and I kind of talked about the other day, that these teams, you know, they'll have that one play. They'll kind of have something that maybe you haven't seen yet. I really don't think that you're going to see Sirianni or Andy Reid get fooled by that in either direction. So I think they know who the weapons are. They know who they need to stop, and they're going to be ready to go on the game. So I think everyone is set, and there will be no surprises come Sunday.
I've said this over and over, but I'll say it again with my very amateur breakdown of this. I think the Eagles have the better 53-man roster, but I also think the Chiefs have the better leaders offensively and defensively in their coaches and Andy Reid and Steve Spagnuolo. I think the Chiefs have the better quarterback, and I think it's going to be a good game, but until Kansas City loses one of these things and doesn't make the plays late, I have a really hard time believing that they're going to lose this one. I think Kansas City wins again.
I have the Eagles winning it because I think the Eagles have the best player on the field on their team. And that's Saquon Barkley. I think he is, we saw many times during the year he was an MVP candidate. There were many times where he just touched the ball and took off. I think that he is going to, I think he wins MVP. I think the Eagles win the Super Bowl. It's a ridiculous prop bet that I threw out there, but I teased it up to Saquon Barkley rushing for over 200 yards in the game on Sunday with two touchdowns. It's a real nice payout if it happens to hit, Matt.
There's no way Saquon gets over 200 yards rushing. There's no way.
The odds on it are really ridiculous.
I'm sure. Yeah. You know what? You can also go take some money and put it in a trash can and set it on fire, and you'll get the same return on it. So there you go. I will bow down to you if that happens.
I think the Cardinals making the playoffs, I think we're better odds than Saquon rushing for 200. So. Yeah.
Look, I mean, I get it. Philadelphia was number one scoring defense in the NFL this past season, but it wasn't like Kansas City was a schlub. I think they were fourth in scoring defense this past year. And they've lifted their game in the playoffs. And Spags has been, man, he's been on a roll here in the playoffs doing some things. So I don't know if anybody's going to go off offensively in this game.
Yeah. You know what? He's going to break one for about 70 yards in the first quarter, and you're going to text me, and we're going to sit there and we're going to be on 200 watch early on in the game after he breaks a big one in the first quarter.
I love you, Joe. I think there's a higher percentage chance that he runs for under 100 than he runs for over 200.
Ooh. I don't know what those I need to look and see what those odds would be of him being held under 100 yards, because man, if that happens, I'd be really, really interested to know which way that means things are going. If that means that Jalen Hurts is just throwing the ball, or if the Eagles just have zero offense at all.
Yeah, look, the Steve Spagnuolo versus Vic Fangio part of this game, and I know talking about coach versus coach isn't as sexy as talking about player versus player, but Spags versus Fangio may be the deciding factor in this game.
Yeah, and just think, I mean, with the blitzes that we have seen Spags go with here, that could, I mean, and that's one of the things where you wonder how he's going to defend that, because if he's sending 6-7 guys like we saw him do against Josh Allen in big time plays, if Saquon gets past that line, he is off to the races if that happens.
Yeah, 100%. So we'll see how this whole thing plays out for sure. But it's gonna be fun. And before I let you go, what is the best event? And I know there's still a little bit of time, and I know you'll get to places. What is the best event that you have gone to so far during your time at the Super Bowl?
I went to Chris Stapleton last night. The SiriusXM Pandora put on a Chris Stapleton concert, and he played all the bangers last night. So it was a great show last night. Every year I always enjoy the Taste of the NFL. That is on Saturday afternoon. That is so that's what I'm going to then. They bring in restaurants from all over the country, from every single NFL city. They bring in restaurants from all over, along with a few local restaurants, and that is always one of my favorite events that they put on, and it's always really, really good food, and it's something I always look forward to on Saturday afternoon of the Super Bowl.
All right, very good. Joe, we appreciate it. We're going to play your conversation with Chris Myers coming up next hour, so people hear more from you then. Thank you for doing that, and safe travels getting back home. We'll see you, I guess, in Florida here pretty soon.
Yeah, safe travels to you down to Jupiter. I'll see you there in a couple days.
All right, very good. That is Joe Roderick covering the Super Bowl for us. We'll take a break, come back, and we'll wrap up hour number one of the program. This is Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. To put the final touches here on hour number one and hour number two, actually the final 45 minutes of the program, because we get done early tonight for Billikens basketball. They are going to match up this evening against St. Joseph's. Our coverage at 7:45 with Bob Ramsey and Earl Austin Jr. And tip off just after 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock Eastern. It is going to be a late night tonight of college basketball. So we'll have that for you coming up here on KMOX. I did want to, we talked about this earlier with Matt Rocchio, but in case you didn't catch it, good big news for the Billikens today. And that Robbie Avila, one of the top 10 candidates for the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar Award. This award each year goes to the top center in all of college basketball. So it'd be really cool if he could come away with the win there. Even when his scoring is down, he is someone who continues to really impact things in a big way. So you'd like to see, I heard Josh Schertz mention the other day that he's got to adjust better to what defenses are giving him. And maybe at times he's a little bit more pass first. It's okay for him to be aggressive, and I'd like to see that happen a little bit more here moving forward. Want to mention the Blues really quickly before we break for the 7 o'clock news with Maria. You know, I was frustrated with this team earlier in the season when Drew Bannister was the coach, and I wouldn't say I placed the blame on Drew Bannister, but I would say I didn't think Drew Bannister was making the team better. And I really, really like Jim Montgomery. I don't know if Montgomery's making the team better right now, and that's not an indictment on Montgomery. That becomes more of an indictment on just the team and who they are. Because if Drew Bannister, maybe this isn't fair to Drew Bannister. If Bannister's not making the team better, you're thinking, well, if Bannister's a more established coach, could he be doing some things differently? And clearly, like, when you have your players calling you out for not working on offense enough in practice, like, obviously there are things that he was doing that were not great. I don't think any of us actually know the impact positively or negatively of those two things, because as Montgomery took over and as that new coach bump or whatever it is started to wear off, we have largely seen this team, I wouldn't say come back to who they were before, because previous, if you use your eyes and watch them play, they're better. They're better now than they were under Bannister, but they're not better to an extent that they're getting more wins. They're not better to a point where they're making a legit playoff run. Yeah, they may not be giving up 8 goals a game and losing 8-3 like they did under Bannister, but they're still losing games. And these last 2 games have been a microcosm of what is holding the Blues back from a big picture perspective. Not even like jumping into the details of the game, but just what the game really represents. On Tuesday, they lose to Edmonton 3-2 in overtime. They had a late lead in that game. They could not hold on to it. They end up losing in overtime. Right now, if you're the Blues and you've got a chance to win a game, you have to win the game. And they didn't win it. Last night against Florida, 2-2 game with 12 seconds to go, Matthew Tkachuk scores a goal. So they're 12 seconds away from at least securing a point. If you can get a point, you have to get a point. So the Blues in the last 2 games, opening up a 6-game homestand that's incredibly important, they have lost the opportunity for a win, and they've lost the opportunity for a point, and now they have sat here and lost 6 of their last 7. Just not good for this team. We'll continue to talk through a number of things when we're back after the 7 o'clock news here on KMOX.